Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience joining us in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM. We also welcome those joining us on the East Coast through Atlanta's 106liveradio.com and those tuning in around the world through blogtalkradio.com. We're glad you all could tune in as well. Jared P. Scott is making his first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about his journey as a writer, producer, and director, but what it's been like for him to shine a spotlight on causes and matters that are important to him and to be able to see the conversations that have come from it. His newest project is called The Age of Consequences. We're going to talk to him not only about the film, but also about our own personal responsibility when it comes to the world that we live in, what he hopes we're able to take away from it, and also, of course, how you can stay up with updates about the film. Jared, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. You know, when I was prepping for this segment, Jared, the thing that really struck me was not only, of course, I think, you know, the time that it must have taken you to be able to put a film like this together, but also the passion that had to be behind it. It's not always easy to be able to shine a spotlight on things that are going on in the world and allow us to see ourselves in it and our role in it. But also, of course, I think to get people involved, I think, is a powerful thing. That's one of the things you've been able to do, though, as an award-winning filmmaker. What has it been like for you, Jared, to be able to do things that you love and to see the response to them?
Sure. I think for anybody who knows the filmmaking world or anybody who follows their passion and sees that play out in whatever that may be, we all know that you have to pour your blood, sweat, and tears into these things. And so, I mean, filmmaking is no different than any other passion project. I mean, we're making essentially nonprofit kind of films. I mean, you know, you don't go into the documentary world and expect to have a swimming pool outside of, you know, a house with a 2-car garage. You just try to pay your rent. So, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, it, what's beautiful about documentary film, though, is you find people that are incredibly passionate about the art of filmmaking, the craft of filmmaking, and we're able to build these amazing teams. And I'm incredibly grateful to everybody who worked on this film and made it possible. I think then, you know, why climate change is we spend so much time developing these stories, writing, listening, reading, learning, and working in this craft that you got to care about what you do. Because at the end of the day, there's going to be months where, you know, you haven't slept and, you know, your girlfriend's upset at you or your wife or your significant other and, you know, you haven't seen your friends, your family, and, you know, you have to ask yourself, why am I putting so much time into this? So usually my response is, well, this is at least an issue that is one of those issues, like many of the big issues, that are critical to have us, you know, have a better understanding, a more robust conversation about, to have a more enlightened public conversation about these issues. Therefore, I'm able to kind of justify, you know, the time put into them more so. Right. But yeah, climate change is one of those issues, right? It's one of the more critical issues we face on our shared planet. And I think understanding this issue, because look, I think what's difficult about climate change is that it's often tough. It's not always tangible. It can feel like a really slow emergency, something that's maybe esoteric, that's over there. I mean, obviously there's the whole conversation about just the uncertainty that's been injected into the conversation, which I don't want to get into. It's more that, look, climate change is happening, and I think that the tough thing for us, for people, what I empathize with, what I struggle with myself, is that we're all victims and we're all perpetrators. You know, we are all beneficiaries of cheap fossil fuels. Our world runs on this single source, and although we've made incredible gains and strides in renewables, we are still dependent. Overwhelmingly dependent on fossil fuels. And so we have to understand what the consequences of those decisions that we've been making since the Industrial Revolution, what those look like. And, you know, it's difficult to come to grips with those, but as the years go on, there are more and more studies that come out, there's more and more voices that come out in this conversation where it's not just this environmental issue anymore. It's this issue of national security, and that's what we talk about in the film.
Sure, sure. And it definitely is being recognized. You know, one of the words, and I was curious about this when I was prepping for your segment, Jared, because one of the words, I called you a few things. I called you a writer, producer, director. One of the things that has mm-hmm. been attached to you is being an advocate, especially when it comes to the age of consequences. Is it difficult, or maybe not so, I'll ask the question anyway, is it difficult for you to balance it, to balance being able to tell the story you want to tell and to not to allow, you know, your own personal feelings about it to seep in?
Well, I think, look, anytime, and anybody who has an iPhone can tell you, as soon as you capture footage, when you frame something, you're manipulating reality, right? You're choosing what to put in that frame and what to exclude from that frame. And then, of course, as the process goes on and you edit, you're choosing what to cut and what to keep and how to arrange that, how to sequence it. There's no – I'm not going to deny that in filmmaking and storytelling that there is – artifice, that there is craftsmanship, that there is therefore bias that's going to be involved in that storytelling. My job though is to, because these issues are so important, there's a real big burden and a real big responsibility for us to try to make those as unbiased and clear as possible. Because I'm not here, it's interesting. I wouldn't call myself an advocate. I feel like I'm more of a messenger. I see what's happening in the world. I kind of gather the information. We organize it. You know, we process it. We try to make it digestible and palatable and hopefully entertaining. And then we put it into a story format because these are usually subject-driven films. And then we create an 80-minute piece that people are able to experience. And we're all able to experience films because, as you know, film is the prevailing storytelling medium of our time. It's such a low entrance barrier. I mean, really anybody with a computer, a TV remote, and a local theater can watch a movie. And anybody, no matter what your age is, no matter what your race, your color, your creed, your political persuasion, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, we're all equal in front of that screen. And so, you know, I think I would say that I'm an advocate for civil discourse. I'm an advocate for robust conversations around films. I'm an advocate for films being not just endpoints, but starting points for dialogue that hopefully makes us a better participatory democracy and a more enlightened citizenry. I'm an advocate for that, but you know, it's not so much an advocate for a certain position. In fact, with this film, I mean, we're really just trying to show a new perspective. We're really trying to, I might say create a new conversation, but the conversation exists. We're trying to shed light on a conversation that's happening right now, that's happening at the Department of Defense, that's been happening since 2003, where we've been looking at climate change as a significant threat to our national security. And you see it time and time again. I mean, you know, conditions that enable terrorist activity and other forms of violence, that's your Department of Defense talking about climate change, posing immediate risk to U.S. national security. That's your Navy and the Department of Defense talking about national security, a catalyst for conflict, a threat multiplier for instability, an accelerant of instability or conflict. This is the Pentagon talking about this. This is not Greenpeace. This is not WWF. It's not a green group. These are people that look at data, that look at facts. The world of the armed services does not reward illusions. There's no benefit for them to politicize this. There's no benefit for them to be alarmist. Their job is to look at the future, to understand what we need to be prepared for, to be resilient. That's their job. And so when climate change starts becoming a part of that mindset, I think that might start waking people up to going, okay, got it, this is not just this esoteric environmental issue. We're now starting to see the impacts of climate change on the ground. And I think we have to start understanding the complicated, yet it's a very complicated process of all these overlapping, interacting socio-political factors that relate with climate change stressors. But at the same time, the concept is pretty clear. Climate change makes everything worse. Climate change is this great exacerbator. You know, so you look at the forensics of Syria, the Arab Spring, what's happening across the Sahel and Darfur. You look at a number of different hotspots around the world. You can see how climate change has an impact. Now, you have to be careful, right? Because, like, once again, going back to that messenger, I'm using other people's words. These aren't my thoughts. This is through reading of documents that are available in the public domain. They're right there. They're written by your Department of Defense if you live in the United States. So a number of admirals and generals, army captains, Pentagon insiders, security experts, all lay the case for this conversation in our film.
And I think, again, that is why it is so powerful. We're about to tell our audience about the premiere of this film, Jared. For those who are just tuning in, he's on the radio dialer online. You're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome to our program today Jared P. Scott. He's not only a writer, producer, and director, but an individual that has been able to tell some powerful stories, including this newest, The Age of Consequences. Jared, you all are getting ready to make your world premiere at a very big event, that being Hot Docs in Toronto. I mean, how does it feel to see all of the hard work finally being able to reach an audience, to reach a platform like this May 1st?
Yeah, no, it's always a huge relief. I mean, whenever you start down the path of making one of these films, you know, we've talked about whether it's important or whether it's noble. And you know, I don't want to be – look, at the end of the day, we're also just making – you know, we're artists, we're creating. But you just hope that what you make is good, you know, because the better the quality of that film, the more that message is going to resonate. So if we're talking about trying to catalyze conversation around critical issues, well, if you don't have a powerful, trailblazing, you know, film, then you're not going to have you're not going to have that conversation in its wake that you expect. So, you know, what helps for us as filmmakers is a prestigious festival like Hot Docs, and we just finished this film. It hasn't even been a week. We took it to the lab to make our DCP and our Blu-ray last Thursday night. So not even a week down here, and we are we're just trying to, like, I think, recover from that. But yeah, to have the stamp of approval from Hot Docs and to premiere alongside other luminaries like Werner Herzog and D.A. Pennebaker and Rachel Grady and Heidi Ewing and a number of other fantastic filmmakers in the special presentations category that we're in, that's huge, because that means that we're starting to get the film community on board. And for us, you know, we want to go out and we want to sell this film to the big players. And I don't want to name all of them, because we're talking to a number with our sales agent. And the idea is ultimately to do the path that most of us end up experiencing films through. So, you know, it'll go to theaters, hopefully. It'll go online to your iTunes and places like that. It'll go to your Netflixes, that kind of rollout, which helps us have the credibility to then go out and make sure that we can get community groups, both the grass tops and the grassroots. The grass tops, I think, are really important in this film. You know, we're talking to the State Department. You know, this would be great for the Pentagon, the UN. You know, this is a film for policy just as much as it is for public. So that's exciting to us, to kind of have that cross-pollination, you know, to try to be able to have it create these conversations for the greater citizenry, but also to show that behind, you know, certain events where you have policymakers that are trying to grasp this and figure out ways to message around it.
Yeah. Jared, has it also been even more gratifying, considering you're getting ready to make this premiere at Hot Docs, knowing that, you know, even though this is something that you wrote and is, you know, something that you conceived, that you had an amazing group working with you? I mean, does all that hard work kind of seem worth it when you see that how quickly, not only, of course, people are going to be able to see it after, as you were just saying to me, that it's been finished? You know, does that make it really more worthwhile for you?
Yeah, no, that's really gratifying. I think it'd be tough to make something and then sit on it for a while. You know, I mean, although we have a film that's still in theaters that we released last year that you know, appeared in a film festival last year, and it's in theaters now, and it's actually going to Netflix on May 1st, the same day that we have our world premiere for The Age of Consequences. And it's exciting, because what happens is, even once you kind of go through your journey as a filmmaker, as an artist, What completes that process, it's a reciprocal process with the audience. You know, people watch these things and they make it their own and they make it new again. And like I said, that discussion that I talked about, that ongoing robust civil discourse and dialogue that has to follow in the wake of these films, that's what keeps this alive. Because, you know, it's both timely and timeless if we embrace that kind of strategy of looking at it not just as a film but as this overall campaign to better understand this issue. So, you know, yeah, there's this immediate satisfaction and immediate gratification that we get, and yeah, and I'm incredibly grateful to our team and to everybody who made this film possible. But it's great when the audience starts interacting more and engaging more and coming back and saying, you know, I never thought about it like that. Or, you know, I have been thinking about it like this. I've just never seen it so palatable and digestible. Or, you know, this is great, and I've heard this talk, you know, I've heard, we've been talking about this for years in the, you know, in the climate and security space, but I've never seen it so entertaining and so accessible. So, like, it's good to have people engage in that. Hopefully most of that feedback is positive. Of course, you know, with something like this, this is, I'm sure, to also incite controversy, because people, there are still some quarters that struggle with acceptance of this issue writ large, let alone the connections to our national security.
Yeah. You know, I think for those who have not been to the website, I invite you to go to theageofconsequences.com. There you can find out more information about the individuals involved in the project, but also about the project itself. One of the things that's a note from Jared that is on the site, if you all go to why we made this film. Jared, I want to put something that you said there, because I think it's two great questions, I think, for us to be able to consider. This film begs the question, how will our society deal with the consequences of our actions? Perhaps more pointedly, what are the consequences of our inaction? Would you agree that the biggest thing about The Age of Consequences is that the ending has not been written, that there is still time for us to be able to get our acts together and to be able to do the things necessary to bring about the change we need?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, to answer that, to why, you know, why I mentioned the fact that this begs those questions, or this question of how will our society deal with the consequences of our actions, why we ask that is because that's kind of your principal first step in any risk assessment. And because we set out to make a climate risk assessment in this film, it really kind of plays out as this big risk assessment, because that's the way that we interpret the way our Pentagon looks at this. They look at risk. They have to figure out how to assess risk. You have to assess risk before you can manage risk. There's two different things. Obviously, we need a tremendous amount of support in our public and policy sectors and in our government to manage the risk. But, you know, the Pentagon is really assessing this risk. So what we set out to do as filmmakers was to also do that, to make this risk assessment. And those are kind of the questions that you have to ask yourself before any risk assessment. You have to just ask, you know, what are the consequences if we don't do anything? You know, what are the consequences of this once it unfolds? And so that's what we started with. That was our starting point as filmmakers. And yeah, you know, I think that, you know, we lay out the forensics and that we unpack the case studies of how this, you know, of what these consequences look like now and what they could look like. And we actually try to stay away from doing too much projecting. In fact, I think there's very little of it in the film. We really look at, like, you know, we talk about the concept, the theoretical of how everything's connected, but we also show in practice these case study analytics, most pointedly Syria, which, you know, has the first quantitative study that was released almost a year ago by Colin P. Kelly, Richard Seeger, and a number of others, and with the National Academy of Sciences at Columbia University, saying that, look, this is, when we study the data, we can actually say that for the first time that drought in Syria was 2 to 3 times worse because of human interference. And so once you start having those autopsies like that, then you look at how, okay, well, here's how the drought played in with food shortages, with migration. You know, you had 1.5 million farmers leave and go to the cities. You then had social tensions. You have, you know, rents going up, food prices going up. You know, it strains the health system. You have negligence on the Assad government. You have poor governance. You have lack of inequality. You know, you start to understand there's all these factors at play, right? So climate's just one of them. I think what we have to realize in this is that every time, like, there's going to be a political and there's going to be an ideological story to tell. Yes, it's Assad. Yes, it's ISIS. And that's always going to be true. But there's always going to be an underlying factor, which is climate. And it's just a matter of how much. You know, But anyway, going back to your question, we wanted to figure out what that how much was. You know, is it a little bit? I think of the baseball analogy, right? We all know that, you know, baseball players unfortunately take steroids, or they did, or they still are. And we know that, you know, baseball players have always hit home runs, but now they're hitting more of them, and they're hitting them further. So they're more frequent, and they're more intense. That's kind of how you have to think about climate change as this great exacerbator. Climate's always been a factor. It's always been a factor in warfare. It's always been a factor in human activity. But now we had this benefit, though, of the Holocene of about 10,000 years, where there was somewhat of a climactic stability outside of, you know, the Little Ice Age and some other moments. But you have basically built society on this understanding that we're going to pretty much understand, like, you know, when the rain's going to come. We kind of know how much water we're going to get. You know, there is this climactic stability in the Holocene. You know, some people say now that, of course, we've moved into the Anthropocene or the Anthropocene. And now humans have altered the chemistry of the planet so much. You know, when you go from 280 parts per million to 400 parts per million, when you fundamentally change the chemistry of the atmosphere and the ocean and everything around you, and that's due to human causes, to man-made causes, and you can start studying that, you have to look at this and go, God, what are we doing and what are the consequences? So you had to come back. That's what we really wanted to – that's the question we wanted to raise. And we start to see how this is playing out, and it's not a pretty picture. But you're right. Time, going back to the military, in any strategic system, time is our most precious resource. Now, we don't have much of it. And a lot of people think it's too late. But it's not too late. It's too late to stop climate change, just to stop this idea of climate change. We've already put our fingerprint on this profound change. But what we can do is we can try to mitigate these consequences, right? Both in forms of adaptation, resilience, preparedness, and then mitigation in terms of, you know, radically transforming how it is that we use and produce energy, changing, you know, a lot of our you know, habits like, you know, agriculture and consumerism. There are things that we need to address as a society. But what we talk about this film is just this idea that we have to rethink how it is that we use and produce energy. Because ultimately, that is something that we can do to mitigate these consequences. And we can also adapt to these consequences. We can't stop it, but yeah, time is our most precious resource when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. And I think, you know, again, for all of us to realize that we have a part, and I think that is one of the great things about how we began this conversation, Jared, about what films like this are able to remind us of, and I think what individuals like yourself are able to remind us of as well. Again, everyone, Jared P. Scott has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Jared. He's a writer, producer, and director gearing up for the big premiere of The Age of Consequences coming up. Of course, that's May 1st at the Hot Dog Film Festival in Toronto. You can go to the website I mentioned earlier. It's www.theageofconsequences.com. And there you can find out more information about the film. You can also find out where it is on social media as well. We've already tagged The Age of Consequences on Facebook and Twitter. I'll remind you all of that here in just a moment. Jared, really appreciate you stopping by. I know this is a busy time for you as you're just days away from the big premiere, but glad you could stop by and hope you'll come by again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, thank you for the time. And we thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For our radio audience, we have more Conversations Live for you coming up at the bottom of the hour, so you all stay where you are. If you're joining us online, though, we're going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.